Hi, everybody. You're listening to the fourth Gamers Confab that I recorded as part of Podcast 25. This is the next to the last, four of five, penultimate edition, whatever you want to call it. In this segment, my guests are LA Times entertainment reporter Ben Fritz, Kirk Battle, also known as LB Jeffries from Pop Matters and Banana Pepper Martinis, and Nick Lalone from the Before Game Design blog. I have one more Gamers Confab to bring you before wrapping up my so-called summer of confabs, and that one will feature writer Chris Dahlin of Save the Robot and the Onion AV Club, also of Edge Online, and game designer Manveer Hare of Raven Software and the Design Rampage blog. I hope you enjoy. It's my great pleasure to welcome three more guests to the Gamers Confab, and they are Mr. Ben Fritz. Ben is the entertainment business reporter for the LA Times, and he covers all aspects of the entertainment industry, including box office and film news, corporate earnings, digital media stuff, and them video games. So welcome, Ben.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Good to have you. And we were talking before we started recording, the fires are happening there in LA, and fortunately Ben is sort of north of them, so those of you who might know, Ben is in LA. He says he's okay, but you can see them, is that right, Ben?
I can see them sometimes, especially at night, and there's the air is very, very smoky.
Well, welcome and thanks for making time. I really appreciate it.
Sure thing.
My next guest is making his first appearance on the podcast, and he is Nick Lalone. He writes the very fine Before Game Design blog, where he's staked out some pretty unique turf analyzing games, their sort of relationship to culture. He's working toward his master's in the Applied Sociology program at Texas State University, and I want to welcome you, Nick, to the show.
Oh, thanks. It's good to be here.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I love your blog. I love what you do.
Thanks.
And making a return appearance, just like Ben is, Mr. Kirk Battle, also known as LB Jeffries. LB Jeffries, the persona, the man, the legend, writes about games for Pop Matters and for his blog, Banana Pepper Martinis. Kirk, I think sort of more than anyone else, has written about the role and the function of games criticism. And he points the way by writing about games in a very analytical but also accessible voice. Kirk is due to graduate from law school this May, I think. Is that right, Kirk?
Yeah, that's right. At last.
At last. So welcome, Kirk, and it's great to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's good to be here.
I'm excited about this conversation because we're sort of taking the pulse of video games kind of at this point in the year, and we're doing that in each of the segments. And it interested me when I sent out a call, with this question that pretty much everybody returned different answers, which would suggest to me that, there's a lot going on that people are interested in talking about. But I thought it might be interesting to start with Ben and sort of think about games from the business side of things. So, Ben, do you want to launch us off?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I mean, I agree there's a ton of interesting things, but one of the issues that I was most fascinated by, if not too pleased, was really the failure of mature games for the Nintendo platforms. And I think the biggest and saddest example is Grand Theft Auto Chinatown Wars for the DS. I mean, this is one of, if not the biggest franchises in the video game world, producing their first ever game for the biggest console in the world. And it seems like a natural fit. Rockstar put a lot of resources behind it, advertised it a lot on television. It was a great game. It got almost universally, rave reviews, as good, if not better, than GTA 4. And it bombed. It sold very, very poorly. In the first month, I believe it sold, I have it here, it sold 89,000 units. And then in its second month, it didn't do much better, 74,000. I mean, to not even get to six figures is really lame, I believe GTA 4 sold well over a million in its first month. So you got a big install base, and it seems like we all know I'm sure most of all of us have DS. It's not that only kids have DSs, but it seems like the audience is just not interested in playing, mature games on their DS, and to a lesser extent, their Wii. And, I think that's pretty bad for the industry.
There are probably a lot of theories that you could throw out there as to why this is the case, but do you have one in particular you think is most accurate?
Well, I think people have just kind of gotten adjusted. I mean, I can only speak, you know, anecdotally, but to playing with certain consoles in certain ways, you know, and the DS, unfortunately, is just in the mindset come to be, and the Wii, really, the place you go, the consoles you use for more casual entertainment, whether you're traveling with the DS or you just turn on the Wii at home, that's kind of what you think of. And there's just a mindset that, unfortunately, even good software apparently, you know, can't get over. And the mindset is that the Xbox and PS PlayStation are for certain types of games, and the Wii and DS are for certain types of games. And even, again, even a great game with rave reviews just doesn't seem to be able to overcome that mindset that's been hardened by Nintendo as to what their devices are made for.
Yeah. I know Sega has been one company that's tried to release these kinds of titles for the Wii, and, you know, they've had, as you say, some disappointing numbers, Mad World being an example, House of the Dead Overkill being another. But they apparently seem intent on sort of forging ahead.
Yeah, that's certainly what they're saying publicly. You know, they're not expressing too much disappointment. You know, you always, it's you know, when it comes to corporations, you know, discussing their financials, it's always action, not words. So we'll have to see what they actually go out and publish. As opposed to if they're just trying to, you know, get, you know, to not look so bad in the press for now. It's tough to believe, based on the numbers I've seen, that this really feels like something they can invest a lot of money in going forward. But on the other hand, the opportunity seems so huge that, you know, if somebody can figure it out, it seems like they can make a lot of money. But, you know, Sega, as you said, has not done too well. So if they do try it, I'm sure they're going to spend very little money, and you're not going to see the, you know, certainly the quality and scope of the mature games you're seeing on the 360 or PS3.
Yeah, I'm curious if you guys, I would sort of open this up to the other two, but is it a Nintendo versus third party thing? I know if you look at the titles that have been released, that it would be, you'd be might consider adult titles or serious games like that. Most of them have been third party titles. Is it just an issue that they're not Nintendo games, so no one wants them?
I don't know. Actually, the game I picked was The Conduit, and it was pretty much for the same reason Ben's picked Chinatown Wars was that. I was just fascinated by, like, why is this game not doing well? When I ended up coming to some conclusions about the way that FPS is designed about it, but it, to me, I think it's just a sort of, I don't know, you know, it's kind of, I think when people think of the Wii, they're mostly thinking of, you know, the box kind of Nintendo put itself into with that tennis game and everything. And that every time I see them, like, trying to branch out, like for example, like Mad World or The Conduit or like a Kami, they all seem like content jobs to me, where they sort of will just build on a, you know, a normal design that everyone's pretty familiar with in terms of the game design, but they'll just put like fancy art in or something. And I can't think of too many times I've ever seen that successfully move a game before.
Well, I guess one of the first things I always think of is, what do the stats say? And I keep coming back to this Nielsen report, the State of the Gamer or whatever, from the last quarter of 2008. And they keep saying that on, let's see, if we go to the, because they don't have handhelds, obviously. But if you look at the average age group for the Wii, it's still from 6 to 11. Whereas the Xbox 360 is 12 to 17 and the PlayStation 3 is 25 to 34. So it might just be that, you know, older people are purchasing the Wii, but they're not playing it. They'd rather go and play their 360 or their PlayStation 3, where there's more games that are catered to them.
I think that's true, but I think a fair number of, and I think we would all agree anecdotally, I think the hardcore gamers, majority of them at this point, own a Wii or at least a DS, you know, even if they don't play their favorite games on it as much. And the DS especially is mystifying to me. Because, I mean, I imagine most of us have a DS. Most people we know who are really into games have a DS. And even if we generally use it more for casual stuff when we're traveling, it's when an awesome, you know, super well-reviewed Grand Theft Auto game comes out, it's really difficult to understand why people don't think that's worth, you know, whatever, $35.
Yeah.
So how much more time is there, or are we past the point of no return on this, Ben? I mean, has the market proven that these games just aren't going to sell, so it's just not going to happen, or is it possible this could be pulled out of the fire?
I think it's unlikely it's going to happen. I mean, I think you've got to, you know, it's the install base is over 30 million in the U.S., and I think it's over 100 million worldwide. And, you know, Grand Theft Auto, you know, you can't have a safer bet when it comes to an M-rated franchise, you know, and if that fails, I can't imagine who else, you know, can make it happen. You know, the only way I could see making it happening is if Nintendo decided they were going to do it, because people trust the Nintendo brand, but, you know, M-rated games are so far away from Nintendo that I can't imagine they would stray from what they're comfortable with and well-known for to do that. And no third party in their right mind, you know, is going to risk tens of millions of dollars making a really high-quality M-rated game for the DS after seeing Rockstar fail at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the argument that nobody wants to play that kind of game on their DS, or relatively few people want to play a GTA game, a GTA game that really sort of goes backwards? Our idea of what GTA games are is now GTA 4. It's a 3D world. It takes into account a certain kind of growth that franchise has undergone. And this DS game looks like an old school GTA game that relatively few people are interested in anymore. They should have made a Wii game, and they should have used those cool motion controls.
I really liked it, but I'd love to hear what the game designers who are here think about that.
Yeah, Nick, do you have a take on that?
I'm trying to think of a good way to say it. Nintendo has gone out of their way to really go and say, this is the family console. This is the family console. This is the thing that anybody should play. My grandma, my mom, whatever. And to put out a game that's targeted to the people who make the system aren't targeting, I think that it was sort of maybe they were kind of asking for it. I guess, does that make any sense?
I was going to say that to me, it was just the reason I never got interested in it was, yeah, the step backwards argument. I just looked at it and was like, I like playing GTA games to like run around New York, or, you know, Bully was really fascinating to me because it's that whole New England environment. So it wasn't, I guess the like overhead 2D environment just seems very, not very engaging. Like, it's not necessarily a very aesthetically interesting place to explore. Mm-hmm. And, the GTA games, like, their plots kind of vary. I know Michael Clarkson just came out with a piece about how the plot and GTA 4's gameplay is really at odds. But, you know, to me, those games are always just about the place you're in.
Well, I love the game. I mean, I wrote about it. I think a lot of people really admired the game for a number of reasons. I think they really nailed the interface, and they used the DS in some really interesting ways that make it especially disappointing to me that the game didn't do better. But, I mean, having said that, I just wonder if, like, there's a certain kind of arrogance on the part of Rockstar that sort of says, let's look at the list of best-selling games for the Nintendo DS, and let's just say we're going to overcome what that tells us no matter what. People are going to buy this game no matter what that list says. And what that list says is Nintendogs, New Super Mario Brothers, Brain Age, Pokemon, Mario Kart, Animal Crossing, Super Mario 64, which was a pack-in, Pokemon Platinum. I'm just reading a list here. I just, you know, called it up while we were chatting. I mean, those are the big games. Is anybody who bought those games going to buy GTA?
But then, if you're right, it is an arrogance, you're right, but it's also a creative risk. You know, it's a risk to a certain extent, but you want it. Well, that's what we want. We want we want people to be taking risks in this industry, and it seems like it's a calculated risk, at least, because you could also argue, well, wow, there's such an underserved market here. There's so much potential.
Yeah.
But, unfortunately, what comes out of it is a lesson that, unfortunately, I think has been proven over and over in the game industry this past year, which is that risks are not paying off, you know? Like, playing it safe is what's paying off. And risks don't, and, you know, GTA Chinatown Wars just plays into that.
Yeah. So from your point of view, sort of branch this out a little bit, Ben, do you sense that publishers and developers are in a kind of retrenching mode because of the economy and because of sales across the board, that this is, you know, forcing them to behave in very conservative ways?
Yeah. I mean, I think last fall, you know, when you saw the very disappointing sales of Mirror's Edge and the so-so sales of Dead Space, for instance, it was clear that it's in the recession, you know, they didn't do too well in the recession. It's the really well-known brands. Even, you know, Call of Duty World at War, which was not nearly as well-reviewed as, you know, Modern Warfare, still sold extremely well. And it's the big brands that are better proportionately selling even better than they used to. The top 10 makes up for a bigger proportion of sales, I know, has been this year than they have in the past. And, you know, that's why I think you're seeing very, very few, very calculated new releases, you know, new franchises from any of the publishers, because there's just very little evidence that, that they can do well, especially in the current economic downturn. People are turning to what's familiar. And you're seeing that all across entertainment. I mean, if you look at the summer movies, they're full. Hollywood's obsessed with sequels and well-known brands.
Well, that's really discouraging. But, and yet, you know, I look at the game release list and there's Bayonetta around the corner, and, you know, there are a few Wii games that are on the horizon that make me think, well, you know, people are still taking a swing at it.
There's a few. I think there's certainly not nearly as many, especially in the AAA and especially in the 360 PS3 only world. There's very, very few. Bayonetta is an interesting example because that's something that was financed in an unusual way, you know, not in the way publishers usually do, which is actually something I'm hopefully going to be writing about later this fall. But yeah, the sort of traditional, you know, an EA or Activision spends, you know, whatever, 20, 30 million or more to produce a game just for the 360 and PS3 that's a new IP, you know, that is going to be a very, very rare thing in the next, you know, in the next few years, I think.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully, I mean, they can keep just exploring our Xbox Live market and everything. I think that, keep sampling games and just, you know, if you're going to introduce a new game mechanic, then just do it like a small game on Xbox Live. I mean, I struggle to, like, call many of these games, like, innovative by any sense, because other than, like, the content, GTA Chinatown Wars to me seems sort of just, like, more of the same. Like, other than being, like, a 2D overhead game on the DS, like, other than the platform it's on, was it doing anything, like, that was, like, majorly new?
No, I mean, I don't think it was doing anything new, but I think there was this little bit of a feeling you got that, wow, you know, like, I can't believe they squeezed this much game into this little handheld.
Yeah.
Which probably doesn't speak to, you know, anything other than just a kind of novelty, maybe, but it's a very professionally, you know, very slick, very impressive design for that platform. I mean, you know, you say for that platform. I suppose if you were to put that on a console, people would be like, what? But, you know, they did give some pretty clever thought to how to use that stylus and how to integrate gameplay into that, the sort of unique aspects of that particular device that I thought weren't just sort of novelties, but were really kind of clever and enhanced gameplay.
And to me, that is innovative. You know, to me, even if there weren't any incredible mechanics we've never seen, you know, the thought of how to combine them all together and make an experience that's still very GTA, that still fits something that you would never think could work on that little handheld touchscreen, and that fit it, and yet still also fit the DS, to me, took a lot of creative thought. And, you know, I think that's innovation in its own way. But that being said, you know, I agree with what you guys are saying, and that maybe a lot more of the innovations, is going to come through the cheap downloadable games, you know, and that's a perfectly fine thing for the industry. It's just, you know, for those of us who sometimes like a big blockbuster experience, it's, you know, a little depressing.
Well, how was, I guess maybe I'm not as familiar with GTA and DS as I would like. How is it different from the first and the second on the GTA series, aside from, I hear there's drug dealing from what I can remember?
Yeah, the way you navigate the game world is different, and your DS itself is this kind of control unit that where you manage everything in a way that feels often very tactile, and just the driving around from my perspective anyway was really pretty cool. I mean, it was obviously nothing like a 3D environment, but it's not quite just 2D either. It's that sort of in between the two.
Yeah.
And I thought it was fun. And the surprising thing about it is how much game world there is. It's pretty amazing. You drive around all these locations and you keep thinking, well, I'm going to bump into the wall here eventually. And, you know, it just keeps opening up and opening up. And so it, to me anyway, was pretty impressive. I mean, you know, the music and the sort of cool radio stuff that they've done, which I really love in the last couple of games, that's really squished down. But again, I mean, to me, it was impressive how much GTA they could squeeze into that little device.
There's even some multiplayer.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to see, I guess, if they try it again.
Yeah. What do you think, Ben? Is there any chance?
Of another? No. I think Strauss-Zelnick would have a stroke if Rockstar told him, you know, tens of millions more to try this again.
Yeah. Well, let's toss it over to you, Kirk.
Let's see. This game isn't actually one that I was, like, blown away with liking, but it just was really interesting to me for a lot of the reasons Ben was interested in Chinatown Wars, is that I played The Conduit and did a review for it earlier this summer. And one of the things I'm starting to notice with the DS and Wii is anytime there's an FPS out for them, because of the technical limitations of the consoles, they're usually, you know, they can't have wide open spaces or things like that. So you'll kind of, you just start seeing these people do, I guess it's just sort of an old-fashioned design model. And it's kind of, it's a lot like Doom or Wolfenstein, where the level isn't really about creating a sense of place. Like, you're not really trying to make someone feel like they're in the White House, you're sort of making sort of like a Rubik's Cube or a maze, you know? So, like, Dimension of the War, for example, is just you wandering around this hospital, and you kind of get stopped by something, and you have to turn around. And, you know, you have, like, the monsters there to keep it interesting, but you're basically, like, walking through a maze. And what's interesting to me is this year, one of the things I keep seeing happening is all of these old game designs that I guess you could call them, like, touchstones. Like, you have something like Shadow Complex, which is getting, like, great reviews, and that's, you know, Super Metroid, but, you know, with the Unreal Engine. Or, you know, I raved about Retro Game Challenge, and that was just straight up 8-bit Nintendo games remade for, like, modern sensibilities. Like, they were basically a lot easier to play was the basic thing that was remarkable to me. So what's interesting is not so much to see a game design that remains classic forever, because, you know, you sort of spot those, and you're like, okay, cool. But to see one that people are rejecting consistently.
That Retro Game Challenge, by the way, that's an awesome game. I mean,
oh yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, no, I loved it. But, like, that's the thing is, I see this in myself too. Like, I gave The Conduit, I think, a 7 out of 10, and I was just kind of like, you know, if this game had come out in 1999 or 2000, people would probably have loved it. But the world's kind of moved on, and it's just interesting that no one wants to go back to the FPS era of, like, get the red key card to open the red door, that whole, like, puzzle mindset. And so the thing that I started, like, wondering about it was just kind of like, well, why? Like, if people love running around a maze in 2D, but in 3D, you know, the sort of the aesthetic experience kind of breaks down. So, you know, the first reaction, I was like, oh, well, you know, moving around a maze in 2D is much easier. You can, like, visually comprehend it. You can see the maze around you. And then I started just looking up level design documents, and Steve Gaynor was talking about when he was analyzing Fear 2, which is another shooter that's very heavy on tunnels and hallways. I've never played it, but, you know, that was a big critique he made of it. And what he said was that the problem with, like, whenever you have a, like, puzzle box or maze design is that there's kind of, there's just the one solution. And this is, like, present throughout The Conduit. Like, if you don't go in with the right gun or approach the situation very carefully, you're going to die immediately. And so it's kind of interesting that with the FPS, you just see people consistently rejecting this kind of a linear design or this linear aesthetic that's just sort of is always kind of inherent whenever you're putting the person in a confined space. Because, you know, The Conduit's, like, it's mostly a bunch of arena sections. There'll be some tunnels, and then you sort of go into a big wide space, and there's monsters everywhere, and you kind of have to get to cover. But, you know, at the same time, it raises questions for, like, something like Call of Duty 4 or Part 5, which is essentially linear, and that is, it's just the roller coaster ride, you know. Mm. And those guys, like, basically take textbook pages out of Disney park, like, Disney theme park rides when they're making their games of, like, now you look at the dead, you know, it's like Half-Life 2, like, you have something that draws the player's attention to this scene, then they look over, then they run around, and, you know, they're very perfectly crafted sort of Pirates of the Caribbean type experience. It's just interesting to me that those two, the sort of do your own pace and walk around like Fallout 3 or Far Cry 2, that one is taking off and people are enjoying it. And the roller coaster ride one, it, you know, I still love it. Gears of War 2 is still a lot of fun. You know, I'm not going to, you know, rave about it necessarily, but, like, you know, that was really well made. But it's like the maze keeps getting rejected.
Rejected not just in terms of game design on a practical level, but rejected on a kind of philosophical level.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, you know, the scores are all these games, you know, eat it pretty much. I mean, I think they all are under 80. And The Conduit was, Dimension of the War was, I'm pretty sure Core, which is another FPS with DS, is also getting these, like, subpar rankings, and they keep saying it's like no one wants to go back to that. But it's, what's interesting is that, you know, gamers love going back to old designs normally. You know, they released another Castlevania. I'm sure thousands of people would buy it, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So let me ask you this, then. This relates to your, so what you're noting here is this kind of interesting phenomenon. Let's presume that Metroid Prime, which has just come out as in this trilogy, which, mm-hmm. you know, is, I think, sort of considered by a lot of people to be a kind of a masterpiece of game design. Let's say Metroid Prime had never been released, and this is the first time we'd seen it in this trilogy. It is more of the roller coaster ride. It is more of the maze and figure your way around, and it's not an open world game. Would it still be as highly acclaimed if we saw it for the first time now as when it came out?
I don't know. I mean, Metro Prime's interesting because it's such a blending. You're playing off nostalgia because it's such a big name, but it's also that kind of, God, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, maybe the Conduit should have just had more collectible stuff. Or, you know, they have like the RPG kind of elements to it. I don't know if I mean, I'm not sure. I guess I never really thought of them quite the same way, but it is basically unlocking doors and running around sort of, it's just a giant puzzle box. It's not, you know, like level per level. I wonder, I mean, you know, it's just kind of, at what point did people's tastes like start to change? Like, you know, as soon as you let games out of sort of the tunnel ways, because Metroid Prime is still very much like an outdoors game. It creates like a real sense of place. Maybe, I don't know, I was like, at first, you know, I had the same conclusion of maybe it's just because it's always taking place in these kind of repetitive, you know, hallways and offices. I remember in Fear, you know, the office level is like painful how long it lasts, and it's just desk after desk, and it kind of becomes this, I don't know, I was joking with Son Ferrari that it was kind of like this disturbing Kafka joke after a while, like you can never get out. You will always be trapped in this office fighting drones.
Well, and how much of I mean, I love Metroid Prime, so I'm not trying to trash the game in any way here or, you know, suggest it's not as great as we thought it was. But, I mean, it's a little bit like the GTA thing we were talking about, where part of your admiration for what you're seeing is just the miracle of how they could do it. In other words, all we knew of Metroid were these 2D games, terrific, amazing Super Metroid game. And then, you know, everyone thinks they're going to bomb with a 3D version of it, and they, you know, Retro comes out with this 3D reconceptualization of Metroid, and it's like a miracle. It's like awesomely good. Mm. But if we had never seen, you know, we were bringing those 2D experiences and how much fun we'd had with the original Metroids with us, and a lot of the purity of that world and Samus and all that are all kind of carried into that next game, that we bring that appreciation from the prior version with us in how we consider the new game.
I very much agree, because I think a lot of the credit that we... I think Metroid Prime is great, but I think a lot of the credit is, wow, they made a very well-designed 3D game that also feels like Metroid. And that feels like Metroid is a big part of the reason I think we like it and give it credit. And that is a big task, and they accomplish that, and that's awesome. And Chinatown Wars is like, wow, they made, you know, a game that works on the DS uniquely on its own, and it still feels like Grand Theft Auto, you know? And that's an accomplished thing, but something like The Conduit or any new IP, they don't get any credit for feeling like anything. They just have to be a great and innovative game on its own, you know? And that's, this is, I think we just, we're going to judge it in a very different, in a very different way.
Oh, well, let's see. You know, like with Metroid 3, I'm trying to think what changes they made as the series went on. Part 2, I kind of got sick of the whole Dark World Bernie sections, but around Part 3, they started adding a lot of Call of Duty parts to it, like linear sections.
Yeah.
It almost... It was like even more kind of like each world was kind of self-contained, but it held your hand so extensively that there wasn't really, I don't know. I mean, if you wonder if like the chief accomplishment of Metroid Prime is not being bad.
Where do you go with that once you've got Prime and then you've kind of got Dark Prime? What do you do next? And it, given that the FPS genre had evolved quite a bit and the whole Call of Duty phenomenon, how do you implement part of that or a piece of that, if that's what people think of FPS gaming as? So Corruption has that sort of element to it. But again, I mean, you could argue that Corruption, the part of the miracle of Corruption was the implementation of the Wii controls, right? So, oh my God, it's Metroid, and I can like swing my arm around and the gun swings with me. You know, it's like a brand new experience.
I'll be very interested to see if Nintendo, especially now that there's, I think Retro is pretty much dissolved, whether Nintendo tries to make a new Metroid game. Because I think the whole, the way the Prime trilogy, you know, they were good games, and I think that's a little tapped out. You know,
Are they?
Have they said they're doing a new? Oh wait, they did say the fact. That's right. They're having the Team Ninja guys.
Yeah. So I mean,
okay, and that'll be really interesting.
Right, but it appears again to be a kind of another reboot that, like you say, they've played this second sort of version of the series out, and now they're going to reboot it again in another incarnation.
Right.
Yeah, I could understand. It's not an FPS, but it's not. It's like, is it one of those 2.5D ones? Is it like a third-person game now?
I'm not sure. I it's a little hard for me to quite grasp, because I understood that they're kind of going to go from one to the other, that you kind of go in and out, that it's not just one way.
Huh.
Was that your sense of it, Nick, or do you know anything about it?
The thing that I remember seeing is it's going to work like the ball in the Prime series. Apparently, I forgot how to talk. But yeah, the ball in the Prime series, right? It just constantly switches between perspectives according to what it is that you're trying to do. But I mean, who even knows? They have a brief trailer on a website somewhere, but that's about it.
But if that game's M-rated and does well, then maybe third parties will feel confident to try something again. But I'm sure they'd rather let Nintendo take that next risk.
Let's toss it over to Nick, and let's see what you got for us.
The game I'm sort of looking forward to, I guess, in terms of just pure video game experience. And I don't even know if it's coming out this year, but L.A. Noire from Rockstar. It's probably one of the first Rockstar games I've actually been looking forward to for as long as I can remember. Does anyone know when this game's supposed to be coming out?
Not the date, have they?
They said it was supposed to come out the last quarter of their 2009 fiscal year. But if they're like most companies, I think they probably would have ended already.
It's definitely before the end of 2009, and I don't think it had a date. So
yeah. But I mean, just because the Rockstar sort of deal, the just super violence in the middle of a city that is supposed to be kind of corrupt and whatnot, I always thought it was sort of played out, even after the 80s one that I can't remember the name of at the moment.
Vice City,
yeah. It was like the pinnacle of what they were going to do, and everything else was just graphic increases along with more content. I really thought they kind of let go of trying to capture any particular feel of whatever culture they were aiming at.
I will say Bully was awesome. That's the only thing.
Well, Bully was awesome, but I guess I'm trying to stay away from... that game was very entertaining, and it captured a lot of spirit of the stuff, but it wasn't a like a Grand Theft Auto game, if that makes
sense.
Yeah,
I got you.
Yeah, and I guess the thing that I keep seeing is that we keep saying innovation in gameplay, innovation in this, but I don't know if anybody, do we even really know what that word means anymore? Because, I mean, when's the last time that something truly innovative happened in the video game industry?
Well, I just stick with Pauline Kael's definition of surprise me.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible one, yeah.
I would say Wii Sports.
Wii Sports? Yeah. That's the thing.
The new one or the first one?
The first one.
Yeah.
I mean, the sort of the proof of concept of how you can alter a control scheme that's nothing like we've seen before.
Yeah. The last time I could really think of one was the N64 and Super Mario 64. It's like, okay, games can actually be 3D. This is what 3D should feel like. And it's sort of, now we're all talking about the Wii, and it's crazy innovative control scheme trying to make the controller into something more than something you just push buttons on. But, and I keep going back to, are we stuck? Is the video game industry stuck waiting for Nintendo to give them something to play with? That's what mm-hmm. I keep thinking of. It's what I keep going back to. It's like, everyone else is making the sequels, Call of Duty this, Grand Theft Auto, the next one. Even the Wii, Nintendo constantly does this too, but they try and actually create something that's, I guess, innovative in a way that maybe no one else has. And I think that there's a huge disappointment right now with the Wii because everyone was expecting a revolution just like when the 64 came out and everything was going on in terms of 3D. Nothing's happening. The games aren't selling as well as they'd like, the games that are not made by Nintendo, even on other platforms. So I keep coming back to, well, what are people looking for in terms of innovation?
I don't know. I'm sorry, go ahead, Ben.
No, well, I was just going to say, I think that's a very, very high level, high standard for what counts as innovation, to go back to Mario 64. I mean, even by a high standard, I think you'd have to say Guitar Hero, you know, in the last 2 years is pretty revolutionary thing, and certainly is a big innovation in the world of video games. But my standard would be a lot lower, you know, and I certainly would call like Left 4 Dead an innovative game in the way that it, you know, it handles multiplayer and the way that it makes people play together, and forces, for instance, you know, just this one example that pops to mind. I think there's plenty of innovation, even if it's not so like, oh my God, this is literally a new dimension I've never seen, a la Mario 64.
Well, I know for me that I think a lot about like in the design of everyday things. One of the interesting things that book really amazed me was the guy was saying that by definition, if you design something new, it's not going to work very well because it's going to be such an alien concept that's not really plugged into the culture. Because he's talking about, like, you know, everyone knows how to use a keyboard now because they've just been around so long. So I think the interesting thing about games is it's kind of like it's not as easy to introduce a brand new, like, innovative concept because it's not going to be until the sequel or the third game that they really get it right. Which, I mean, kind of like it's horrifying for the game industry because if you do something new, it by definition, the more it doesn't sell, the more you did something new, I guess. It's not really quite the standard, but you know, you have to keep play testing. It's like Valve. You have to test it on people for like months.
I guess I keep thinking of the term innovation being synonymous with the term revolution. Revolution in gameplay through our innovative techniques. It keeps coming. Like, am I wrong in thinking this?
I don't know. I mean, I guess it. Do you think? Well, I mean, let me just pitch this another way. How much innovation do gamers want? Like, people who play games, people who buy them on a regular basis or even a semi-regular basis, seem anyway to me to be perfectly satisfied with small bits of innovation, incremental changes that give them a bit of a different take or a bit of a different gameplay feel or whatever, different story, and that these things tend to happen in that way, incrementally, and then suddenly you add it all up and then there's Fallout 3.
Yeah.
I think one way this all ties together, though, is I think a recession is a bad time generally for innovation in mass culture, in popular culture. And you see this in the movies that are doing well. People are returning to what's comfortable. I think you're seeing that in games. And people don't have as money to spend, and maybe they're not, frankly, as happy. It's, you know, people want comfort food, you know. And I think about, you know, like when I'm depressed, sometimes late at night, you know, I'll put on like old Simpsons DVDs. For some reason, that makes me feel better, you know, like watch anything new. And, you know, the same thing in kind of, you know, I might play an old game I haven't played in a while. I think people like what's comfortable. I think we're going to be seeing that playing out in the current recession.
I'm a little worried that I'm asking, I guess, just kind of rhetorical questions. But I guess in terms of social theory, going into sociology and trying to keep this as easy to say as I can think, when it's hard to make money, like you see this in lower income groups and stuff throughout society, pretty much all over the world, not having access to the culturally favored goals leads to more crafty ways of making money. So I would think that, and maybe this is just me trying to apply something broad to something very specific, that the more difficult that it is for a game company to make money, the more crafty they're going to try and be in terms of either content or the thing that they do. But at the same time, they have to meet the video gamer's idea of what a video game is. But I don't know if the consumer always knows exactly what it is that they want.
I mean, I've been really impressed with you know, DLC starting to really come into the mainstream. You know, like Call of Duty 5 didn't get reviewed very well, but I think they've done really well with their downloadable content. And it's just kind of, honestly, at this point, Call of Duty 5's multiplayer is better than Part 4's because the maps are just better made. This is just my personal opinion. I don't want to take anyone off, but Infinity Ward's multiplayer maps always feel kind of like a football field. Like, there's just the point where both teams just smash into each other, whereas Treyarch, I might just go so far as to say they make a better multiplayer map because it's much more, it's kind of like a circular kind of area and everyone's kind of moving, and I almost want to say it's like a track, you know? Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that's really interesting is people just polishing down things like that.
Yeah, because I'm sorry, go ahead, Ben.
Ready? Go ahead, Michael. I've been talking a lot.
No. I get to talk all I want. I'm doing a bunch of these. So I was just going to say,
I think DLC, you know, business-wise, publishers love DLC because it's so cheap to make and the profit margin is huge compared to what it is for a game. But also, you know, gamers want to spend less, just $10 for more DLC to extend an experience you already have rather than $60 to risk something new. Again, it's going to make a lot of sense in a recession, you know, and there was a good survey that we reported, actually my colleague Alex Pham reported on. The hours spent playing games this year are up, but the amount spent is down. And, you know, people are buying more DLC, they're buying more used games, and they're spending more time with multiplayer online of games they already have. And again, you know, all that kind of stuff is leading towards less risk and more, you know, if you're going to spend money, you know, $10 on DLC for a game you already like, you know, that's a pretty safe bet, both for the consumer and for the publisher.
I wonder, Nick, if you think that the people who are likely to take these risks in a risky market or going somewhere new, partly because now's a time to jump in because everyone's playing it safe, you know, my chance of splashing big as an indie person would be better in this market in a certain way because everyone else is playing it safe, that we're likely to see innovation among the indie on the indie.
Yeah, side. I mean, look at the games that are coming out, especially on the PS3, which seems to somehow attract so many indie developers. We've got Fat Princess, and I guess I've just been getting into these games, so maybe they're fresh in my mind, so I think they were released yesterday. But I've been playing Everyday Shooter. That game is amazing. I don't know why I hadn't played it up until that point. And as far as I can tell, those games are selling extremely well. And I would imagine that the cost for the indie developers is going to be a lot less in development time in terms of, I guess, just overall cost. So they're probably going to be making more money per game sold than most publishers do. Mm-hmm.
But that's the world we're living in, it seems to me, particularly with the kind of games you're describing on PS3, that a game like Fat Princess, a game like Shatter, these games that are basically, they're systems that are completely familiar to us with a tweak,
mm-hmm.
right? That it's a little thing that's different. In Shatter, it's two or three things that are different, or they're stealing a mechanic from one kind of game and putting it into another and adding a couple of really cool sort of push-pull mechanics, which we haven't seen. And suddenly that Pong game, Space Invaders game, feels yeah. like a brand new experience. It's electrifying,
it
you know, which it is. It's an awesome game, but it's not. I mean, what about that is new is interesting and it's what elevates it. But what about it is old is what essentially grounds it as a game that will likely keep you playing, I think.
Yeah, and I keep forgetting to say that in terms of revolution, what's the text that everyone always refers to, the structure of scientific revolutions, where mm-hmm. paradigm shifts or revolutions don't occur on a regular basis. There's millions of little things that happen, and then at some point somebody goes, oh, and then everyone is doing the same thing. But it's completely different than it was the day before. So I guess in revolution, it's what I'm thinking of in terms of innovations and stuff like that. When's the last time that happened in the game industry? And that's why I keep going back to Super Mario 64. Because while Rock Band and Guitar Hero and all of that stuff did do something, they were taking something that had already existed, which is basically just rhythm games and stuff like that, and packaging it in a new way. So I don't know if that game itself caused revolution or if that was just another step towards one. If that makes any sense.
I don't know if I'd ever... I mean, all these games have predecessors, though. I mean, before Guitar Hero, there was Amplitude. You know, like, it's just... I always see it as kind of a game... It's just tiny little steps. I mean, you can always find the game before that they were building on. Stephen Totilo had a really interesting article about The Club, which was, I mean, you know, the first FPS. It was like, if you get a headshot, you get more points than if you shoot them in the body. And you see that everywhere now, you know. It's in Gears of War 2, it's in the 50 Cent Blood Money game. And so that idea there, just these touchstone mechanics, like you're saying, Michael, that... Isn't Justin Converne's write-up on Batman Arkham Asylum was basically, it's a bunch of stuff we already know works. Like, we all like stealth, we all like picking up gadgets that unlock new areas, you know, like the sort of, I guess, touchstone designs.
Yeah, which in a funny kind of way makes... Arkham Asylum a little bit like Retro Game Challenge.
Yeah, it's the same. It's just these old things.
It's perfectly executed things that we know. And in the case of Retro Game Challenge, some of those little games are actually better than the originals, believe it or not. Some of those little arcade kind of classics that they emulate or that they try to homage, in my opinion, are at least as good as what they're homaging. I haven't played Arkham Asylum, though, so I guess I can't really talk about that.
I guess to me it's sort of like, even the Industrial Revolution, like any scientific innovation, I don't know the book you're referencing, but it seems like they always do take a long time. Like, it's not an overnight process.
Yeah, I guess the thing in terms of revolutions looking backwards is that you can always point toward, not a specific time, but a general time when those things happened. So there's an event that just says, oh, well, this is here now. So I guess for the Industrial Revolution, it's what, the first appearance of an actual factory? And in the Enlightenment, you have various things happening. But yeah, I guess it's hard to talk about those things because they're general trends that happen just over, you know, dozens of years, hundreds of years.
But like, if, I think you're talking about Kuhn's The Structure of Scientific Revolutions, and that's more about how we see the world, how we understand the world. Like when we realize, you know, when you realize that, you know, matter is made up of, you know, atoms and molecules and not out of, you know, the elements, fire and earth and wind and water. And that's more a thing of kind of how you see things, and that, which I think is more a question of how critics understand games. But in terms of production, at some point we might say, wow, you know, games are really something different than we ever thought they were. We should think about games in this radically new way because there's all this evidence in front of us we've never put together. But in terms of the creation of art, I think it's always what we're seeing in the process is always, it's always just really evolutionary, you know, and sometimes it's evolving faster and sometimes slower. And I was just going to say, I think the one thing this year that I'm really going to be keeping an eye on and interested in, the one sort of big risk I see coming this year is, you know, is Brutal Legend, for sure. And it's still grounded in some things we know, and it has a big star, but it's still, you know, it's a new franchise. It's, you know, a creator who's well-respected but hasn't sold a lot of games in the past, certainly in the last decade. You know, it's one of the few new IPs getting a big push from a big publisher. You know, and that's if that game does badly, it's going to be a real blow to, you know, trying to get companies like EA to invest in games like this. On the other hand, if it does well, you know, I feel like there'll be some hope for 2009, you know, still being a good time for AAA game creativity.
And Jack Black needs a hit.
Oh, yeah. We all feel bad for Jack.
And Kirk, is there anything in particular you're looking forward to? And Nick had mentioned L.A. Noir game.
God, it all got pushed back because of Call of Duty 6. It's like everyone bitched so much about the Christmas season being packed in 2008. There's nothing now. It's like game developers are like, all right, fine. Now you don't get anything. Probably, oh God, this is going to sound sad, Wii Fit Plus.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that too.
I really enjoy, you know, like to me, that game is still one of the most amazing things I've ever. Like, you know, Michael, have you played it with your family at all? Like, it's so, like, the social dynamics it generates. When you get into an argument about who can do more push-ups, you're just like, my God. people have been trying for decades to get this to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was interesting to me because, you know, EA came out with their fitness game for the Wii as well. And it sold well, I think, didn't it, Ben?
Yes, it did.
I bought it and I tried it and I thought, my first thought was, this is going to be better than Wii Fit. But you know what? After a month or a month and a half or whatever, I sort of lost interest. And if I think about it, Wii Fit got more time in my family, more attention. We've come back to it occasionally. The yoga stuff, I think, is interesting. I still do it occasionally. And the EA one just didn't live long in my house. And I guess I would chalk it up to the fact that Nintendo's design, even with flaws in Wii Fit, there's still a game, there's still a heart of that experience that's more interesting over the long term than sort of the EA thing.
It was injury prone. That rubber band had a wicked welt from getting popped by it.
Yeah. That was, God, it's so cheap.
I think it's that Wii Fit board. Every time it's just belittling me for not exercising the last night. Just have to please him. It's the thing that kept me coming back. Like, I'm sorry, little board. I'm sorry.
I love it when it's kind of like, so you've gained 5 pounds. You want to talk about that? And you're like, no. And it's like, come on. You can tell me. I'm the Wii Fit board. I don't want to Wii Fit.
The EA game goes completely the opposite direction. It's like, you're doing a great job. You're the best. Keep going. Keep at it. You know, it's just relentlessly encouraging.
It almost gets belittling after a while because, you know, you're just sitting there moving your arms up and down. It's like, all right, lighten up, man. I'm not doing great. Come on.
One of the things that I have found interesting is that it seems like we're moving away from games that you play by yourself with a bunch of people online to games that you play with your friends in the same room.
I'll definitely say that if I'm playing on Xbox Live by myself, everyone gets muted. Like, I don't talk on the internet, really.
It's like you've been noticing or seeing more and more games where you might be playing with a bunch of people online, but you don't want to hear what they have to say. Just seeing like the new Super Mario Brothers game that's coming out. It's just games that you sit in your house and play with somebody with. It's just been sort of, I guess I haven't found a lot of those games recently.
Yeah, I mean, that the whole co-op sort of evolution of some modern games, where it's almost a necessity now to have a co-op mode in so many games, would suggest that game developers are thinking about that from the beginning of game design now. How can we make this co-op either online or local?
I guess the fancy also is it reduces them giving it to GameStop. I mean, all of Nintendo's multiplayer stuff is still netting like $45 from the used sales. So, you know, Mario Kart, you might as well buy new. I would have, this is kind of a confession, but I've been playing a lot of Smash Brothers lately. Yeah, I did. And it's a lot funner with people, and I'm never going to sell it because anytime companies are over, I'm like, you guys want to play Smash Brothers? It's easy.
Yeah.
Don't be scared. Trust me. It's really easy to play.
Just keep them away from Mario Party.
That's not a problem at my house. Well, gentlemen, we've come to the end of our time, and you guys have a great rest of your weekend, and happy gaming to you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Take care, fellas, and thanks again for joining me.
No problem.
Later. Bye.